we plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. So originally, I thought that this episode would essentially look back at the five founder interviews we did and basically try to define a structure and ideas and thoughts on goal setting. But these founders really made our job easy because I felt like there were so many commonalities and common threads that ran through the interviews. It's pretty easy to pull out what seemed to be best practices, at least based on how you and I and these five founders we interviewed set their goals.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me because we were intentional about asking different kinds of folks who work in different niches and who are at different phases of their founder journey. So the similarities between the five of them were actually a surprise to me.
Yeah. And the neat part about it, and I think the thing that you and I picked up on pretty early, is that each of them also had unique aspects to how they set and how they monitor and how they keep themselves accountable to the goals. They each had their own unique takes on the process. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, essentially, is pull out the common themes and what we feel like are best practices, and then also look at some unique spins that each of these founders put on them, because these spins obviously work better for each of them. It's their unique take, because based on their personality or just some way they work, they know that unique take works for them. And I think as a listener, you can hear this and think, boy, that would really resonate with me, the way Brennan journals about his goals, you know, or the way Dave did his vision board, right? But I mean, some of these unique aspects I think could resonate with individual listeners.
Well, shall we begin with the similarities?
Yeah, sure. Let's dive in.
So the things that struck me about each of the interviews is that all five of the founders that we talked to set big goals, usually annual goals, and then are very intentional and careful about breaking those annual goals into smaller steps, whether that's monthly or weekly tasks, with the understanding that you can't just have a big goal like write a book or increase your MRR by 20%. Like, there's this sense of needing to make that very actionable and taking small steps towards the larger goal over a shorter period of time. And that's kind of textbook SMART goal stuff. We won't go into that model right here, but it's everywhere, and you can check into that if you're not familiar with what I mean when I'm talking about SMART goals.
Yeah, I agree. It was striking that I think four out of the five we interviewed, Brennan, Justin, Adrian, and Dave, did it on an annual basis. And I think Tracy did it just as needed, like as new goals would come up. So it wasn't necessarily on a calendar basis. And they came up with the larger goals. And from what I recall, all of them essentially broke it down into smaller steps. So they had these sub goals of, instead of saying, you know, I'm going to 2.5x my business and then in a year and not doing anything about it, they would then break it down into, well, what does that look like in January and February and March, or the goal of launching this product. They kind of work backwards and say, what do I have to do after month one, month two, and month three? And to be honest, I think that's something that I didn't do early on. I didn't realize the importance of needing to have these milestones along the way and these checkpoints. That is something I absolutely do now. I found it's been critical to me being able to measure where I am in terms of meeting that goal. Because if you set a goal that's 12 months out, it's really hard to know if you're going to hit it if you're not looking at it pretty frequently. And so I think this is a key component that if you're not doing in your own goal setting, that you need to start thinking about how you can break that task into smaller steps that are either measurable, or at least you're able to visit them along the way, to have these touch points every month, maybe every quarter, where you can see, what is my progress? Am I falling behind or am I ahead?
One of the suggestions that I really liked was from Adrian when he talked about moving up the timeline. So even if it's an annual goal, pretend that the end date is actually April 1 and really get very concrete about what would have to happen in order to get your goal finished in that more intensive amount of time. And I thought that was really helpful because it does force you to break down the steps really small and get really clear about what would have to be finished were you to, like I said, intensify the timeline.
Another common theme that we noticed with the founders we interviewed is that they not only broke the goals into smaller steps, but then they monitored their progress on some kind of a regular basis. And there was variation here. There were some folks who did weekly monitoring of their goals, and they even had accountability tied into that. And then other folks monitored them on a monthly basis. And I think somebody mentioned they did it quarterly. So there's different timelines you can do this. But again, if you set a goal that's 12 months out and you're not looking at it pretty frequently, let's say every 1 week to 12 weeks, some span in there, it's really easy to just lose track and forget what you're even working on.
And again, the way people did that varied a little bit. I think it was Brennan who talked about taking some time every Friday and just journaling about what he did that week and what he wanted to do but didn't get done. And it was more narrative. It wasn't like checking things off of a list. It was more of a personal reflection time on what his work life had looked like that week. And then you've got someone like Justin who has more checkbox lists that he's working through and checking off each week. And then Dave, of course, talked about the importance of masterminds and regular contact with other people who he is on a weekly basis really checking in with about the goals that he's accomplishing or not accomplishing each week.
And then Tracy has her Google Doc where I think she said every day she opens it and her big picture goals are at the top, and then it just flows down from there to the specifics. And that she said she reviews that every day and it just reminds her, what should I be working on?
So the theme of accountability also came up quite a bit in our conversations. Masterminds were a major theme. The guys that are doing podcasts, both Dave and Justin, talked about the importance of their kind of podcast being a place where they have some accountability, both with their podcast co-host and with their audience who they feel some accountability to.
Yeah, this has long been something that I've seen value in it once I started doing it, because I was kind of on my own as a founder from, let's say, 2005 to 2011. And then right around there was when I really started kind of diving into the mastermind thing. And I heard of them in the info marketing space, but I'd never heard of them, anyone in startups doing them. And since then, I've been such a proponent of it. And Mike and I have talked about them on Startups to the Rest of Us and kind of outlined how you should hold, if you're going to have one, how you should hold a startup mastermind. And it's been a theme here on Zen Founder, obviously, as well as at MicroConf. So I think that a mastermind is probably the best way I know of to get accountability, better than your spouse or your business partner. You can have accountability from folks like that, but it sure complicates relationships. And there can sometimes be things you want accountability for that just don't apply to those roles. So it's almost better to have someone at a bit of a distance who's still following and invested in your story, hearing about it on a regular basis, every couple weeks or every week, depending on how you do it, but who can be, you know, not impacted by the end points, the end results, I guess, who won't get stressed out if you do fail, or who won't get stressed out by hearing that you're stressed out about it. Because sometimes you need to keep a different face when you're talking to a spouse or a partner or a business partner.
Yeah, Tracy talked a little bit about some of the challenges of having her husband be her accountability partner to keep her on task. Some of the tensions that can come up when you've got your spouse looking over your shoulder saying, hey, are you supposed to be on Reddit right now? Are you supposed to be on Facebook right now? So it sounds like that external person, like you said, who is invested in you, who cares about you, who is motivated for you, but who isn't so deeply intertwined in your life that they have too much of their own emotional complications related to your work.
Right. And so the fourth theme, I think, the first theme we talked about today was breaking tasks into small pieces. The second was about monitoring progress. And the third was about accountability. The fourth one we pulled out is that goals need to be driven by a deeper purpose, like a meta goal, an intention, a why, right? A why with a capital W, like starting with your why. And it's, if you have goals that vary from that, then either your why is out of whack or you should revisit your goals and figure out what's wrong with them?
I have to say these were my favorite parts of these conversations, maybe because I'm kind of a meta-level thinker myself, but I really appreciated how each of the founders that we talked about not only their task lists or their revenue goals, but talked about the kinds of values, or I think Brendan and I talked about meta goals, things that are driving what they do every day. And I feel like that's so important, because the why is what helps you to stay motivated when you're tired or when you're bored or when there's sort of interesting news things to read. And I appreciated the way that Tracy talked about how she puts her like big goal on the top of her morning goal sheet, and she looks at it every day. And if the goal is something like to be a significant voice in the tech world, you know, that's a big goal. But to look at it and to see that every day and have that drive the kinds of decisions that you're making, and ask, hey, is this particular task going to get me toward my meta goal, my big thing that I want to do in the world? And then Justin also talked about this importance for him of leaving a legacy, of living a life that he's building so that his kids can look at him and appreciate what he's done, appreciate how hard he's worked, and appreciate what kind of life he's built for them. And that filters through everything that he decides to do or not do.
And I think it's easy to set a why based on what you think your why is, and to think through your highest intention, your highest meta goal, your highest why, and to write that down in theory. But then the real test of it is once you start setting goals. And if you look back over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, goals, and those goals aren't lining up with your why consistently, I would actually say that your why may be out of whack. And you may not have nailed what your true underlying why is. You've picked one that you want that to be your why, but it maybe isn't, because the implementation is the goal. Like the practical expression of those are the goals that you're setting. And so if you're setting goals and you're making them and they're making you happy, but they don't align with your why, I think it's a nice feedback cycle that you can really look at. I bring this up because I'm seeing this myself, actually. Like, I have a why that I've written out and I like it, but I'm seeing goals that I've set and accomplished that were worthwhile, and I'm not so sure that they line up with that why. And so I'm wondering what I'm missing, and I need to circle back here.
I think that's an interesting way to think about that, because I usually think about it the other way. You sort of start with your value or your why or your big important thing in your life, and the goals have to align with that. But I like that you're reversing it and asking, hey, these are all the things that I'm actually doing in my life and the things that I'm working on. Perhaps my why needs to be aligned, or perhaps I have kind of made an error in what's really driving me. Maybe it's been aspirational rather than truly reflective of who you are and what's going on in your life right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think it can drift. I know it's not supposed to change dramatically over time, but I do think that depending on what phase you're in, this can certainly change for you.
I can appreciate that. I had a laugh out loud moment in the car when I was listening to your interview with Dave Rodenbaugh. And when Dave said something like, oh, well, certainly Sherry sets a lot of goals. And you're like, not really. I could not believe you said that.
Not so much.
But it was an interesting moment for me to be like, well, perhaps my life right now is much less about execution than it has been in the past. Because I still see myself as the person who is writing lots of papers and getting lots of things done. But since I've moved into this phase of life where so much of my life is about parenting and being with people and kind of taking care of people, I'm much less rigid and accomplished, I'll say, in my goal setting and like task accomplishment. And so when you and Dave had that little exchange, I was legitimately a little bit insulted, but then I was like, well, actually that's true. Like, I'm much more value driven right now than I'm task driven. I feel like I have to be that way as a mother of young children. If I go crazy about all the things that I would like to get done or aspire to get done, it will not be a happy household. I will not be a good parent. So my ambitions right now are much more about being present and warm and calm and nice than being someone who gets a lot of things done.
I think that's such a good point, is that as you're setting goals or thinking through what you want to get accomplished in a year, you have to have a reality check. You know, you have to take a look and say, what am I sacrificing? What am I going to sacrifice if I really do want to achieve these goals? Am I going to sacrifice time with my family? Am I going to sacrifice a little bit of my sanity? Am I going to toy with burnout, as Tracy talked about, you know, how she's experienced burnout several times because of these goals and deadlines that she's set. I think it's easy to bite off more than we want to because entrepreneurs tend to be impatient. We tend to be ambitious. We tend to want to get things done. And so I think the point you bring up is a good one. It's that have a reality check, like have some type of look at your goals and think, you know, can I actually get this done without sacrificing things that I don't want to sacrifice?
One of the ways of thinking about goals that's been important to me is you're basically deciding what pain you want in your life. What hard thing do you want to do? And so when I'm trying to decide between how many books I want to write or how many conference presentations I want to do, I always have to weigh that against the pain of what it costs. So I think that's it's a helpful way for me to think about goals. Like, what am I willing to experience some sacrifice and pain and loss over in order to accomplish something? And it's definitely changed since I've had children and gotten a little older than it was in my 20s when I was really willing to like pull some late nights and do some crazy things in order to get something done.
Right. And when there was less of a downside to doing that, you were tired a little bit, or maybe you burned out every once in a while. But now there's a chance that if a person got too sucked in and too goal driven, that you could miss several years of your child growing up. And that stuff you can't get back. And so the stakes, I think, are a little higher than when we were a little more carefree in our 20s and able to push into this without having to weigh these complicated factors of family. And I think that, I mean, the point here, right, is that goals, your goal strategies, they may change in different phases of your life. I think your why can adapt over time. As we're talking about, I think different seasons are going to dictate that. I think they shouldn't change dramatically and drastically all the time. Otherwise, you're doing something wrong. But I do think that every few years, especially if there's a drastic life change, let's say you go from non-married to married, or you go from no kids to having kids, things can adapt there. And you shouldn't feel guilty or bad about it, or like you're somehow failing at this. I think it's time to be realistic and, you know, really evaluate if your goals still meet what you want to do. One other pretty interesting thing that came out that was unique to Dave Rodenbaugh's interview was his family goals and the vision board that he and Tracy had put together. And I liked that concept. I think if you haven't listened to that episode, you should go back and check it out, because it was a neat application and a way to essentially get his spouse on board. And I'd imagine the whole family, if they're going to be, you know, talking about some vacations and stuff like that, on board with your goal setting process.
It sounds like it was actually Tracy trying to get Dave on board with.
Well, that's true.
A community art project.
But what a good way to do it in a way that like works for the founder's mind, right? She knows that he's already setting these goals, these business goals. And it's like, how do I trick Dave into also setting family goals and working towards them?
Oh, the trickery.
Indeed.
Speaking of goals, during the weeks that the series was airing, you accomplished some pretty big goals with certainly the launch of the Drip workflow process. What is that even called? A process?
Just Drip visual workflows.
Well, yeah, that. Obviously, you all worked really hard on that and you got that goal accomplished in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it was a big one. I'm not sure that I realized how big it was when we first started talking about it 8 or 9 months ago. And, you know, basically, if you're listening to this, you probably know that Drip is email marketing and automation software, and something that a few of the larger players in the space have is a visual builder to allow you to visually construct a user journey, like a customer's journey of, hey, they're in a trial sequence, and if they do this, pull them out, and if they're tagged with this, then do that, and it's all done visually. It's not quite drag and drop. We found a lot of problems with that, but it's basically just a visual flow.
And if you're non-technical and you don't know what any of that meant, just keep listening. It's okay.
It doesn't matter, yeah. But it was a big task, you know, and it wound up being about six months of development. And as it came down to it, I realized how kind of groundbreaking and game-changing this was being for us, because we were doing beta testing with it and we were just rewriting all of our stuff in it, and it's so much cleaner and we could do stuff that is more powerful. So we did a big launch with it. And with a big launch comes a lot of copy and a lot of emails to be written and a lot of screencasts and knowledge base articles and work. And I mean, there was just so much stuff. And it was basically the entire Drip team just focused on something for weeks at a time. And we really haven't done that since our last launch this big was about 18 months ago, 18 to 20 months. And so it was a big goal that I didn't realize was as big of a goal until like the last month when things started shaping up. And of course, there was a lot of, I would say there were some late nights and there was some stress involved, but it was not like train wreck launches like it used to be, where you just frantically work until 2 a.m. trying to get stuff done. It felt really good to get it done and get it live. And of course, since it had a positive reception and really impacted our business in a positive way, it feels great to have that done.
It was fun for me as a Drip user to watch all of the emails and things coming through and be on that side of watching your work. And I'd like to point out that I'm a user, not a customer, as you pointed out to me earlier. There's got to be some perks to being your wife.
Yeah, for real. So that was cool. Yeah, you get to see it from that side, from the user side. And you, as we speak, are in the process of launching your guide to founder retreats.
Yes, I have several tabs open on my computer right now, making sure that my copy is finalized and that my Gumroad thing looks cool. And yeah, I'm excited to finally put it out there. I think writing has been something that I've wanted to return to for the last several years. It's been a theme in my retreats. So I'm excited to have a product to ship, to have something that's done. And I hope that it's something that Zen Founder listeners really enjoy. It certainly was born out of our conversations on the podcast and many of the conversations that I've had with listeners about the things that they have found value in. So to be able to outline kind of all of my best ideas, the steps to planning a retreat, some step-by-step suggestions of what to do on a retreat, how to implement your retreat insights once you return home. I'm excited to share it. I hope it's helpful.
Yeah, you did a bang-up job on it. I know you invested a lot of time into it and then hired an editor to run through it and then hired a layout person to lay out the ebook, and it looks really sharp. So, you know what's nice about it is it's such a nice first product because it's, 28, 29 pages, a couple of worksheets. It's got a really nice cover. It came out really sharp. It's very professional. But it wasn't a 250-page book that you had to spend 6 months doing. It was something that you were able to crank out in kind of a couple months, you know, on nights and weekends. And I think it's a really respectable first product to have under your belt. It's certainly better than the first product I ever cranked out.
Yeah, I think it has helped me face some of my fear of launching. And of just getting something out there. And like you said, I think there's a bigger book that I want to write that I am writing, that I'm working on, but it's really gratifying just to get something done and out and have that experience, which I'm hoping, if it's reasonably well received, will motivate me to continue doing some more writing on the larger project.
On a side note, I mean, if you're interested in reading that ebook, it goes on sale here in the next few days, and you can get on our email list at zenfounder.com.
I just want to say an extra special thanks to Tracy Osborne, Dave Rodenbaugh, Adrian Rose Brock, Justin McGill, and Brennan Dunn for sharing their insights and spending the time to chat with us. As always, a very warm thank you to our patrons, the people who are supporting Zen Founder and helping to make it happen. So thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in your earbuds next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.